The fool may think he's a wise man, but the wise man knows what a fool he's been. I'm Paul Falcone. Welcome to the Pro Fools Podcast. Right on.
Hey.
I see you're in the big studio. What studio are you at?
I'm at my home studio, but the studio where I'm a staff engineer in Atlanta, Patchwork Recording Studios.
I was going to say that's quite a home studio, but
yeah.
you're a resident studio. First, I should tell everybody, I'm Paul Falcone. We're here on the Pro Fools Podcast, and I'm here with Anthony Majors, coming to us straight from Atlanta.
How you doing?
From the A.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, Patchwork, it's a beautiful studio. It's a historic studio. It's really great that you're able to be broadcasting from there tonight. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, I was honored to, you know, be on the show. So I called the owner. I was like, hey, you know, you mind if I do the podcast from the studio? He was like, sure, you know.
Right on. That console's looking great. Let's get right into it. Where are you from? How'd you get your start? What drew you to making records?
I'm originally from Oakland, California, Bay Area.
Oh.
I grew up in California doing all sorts of different things. Like, I was in marching band. I was in kids orchestra. My teacher was actually the principal percussionist for the Oakland Symphony. So I was doing things like playing in the symphony certain days and then playing on church on Sundays. Real homegrown gospel Christian music, you know, roots. So that's kind of where my background and music kind of came in, like playing drums in the church, doing audio, everything, singing in the choir. So, you know, that's really like my background as far as where the musicality came from. And as I kind of grew, I realized like I was really into, you know, how the sonics of everything were coming together. So playing in jazz band, I would be really focused on tuning the drums and making everything sound a certain way, to a point where my teachers were like, yo, like, you can't sit here and tune these drums, you know, like, I know they suck, but like, you can't spend all day trying to make everything sound. And I just never knew why, like, it would bother me. It's like, this isn't the right sound for this song that we're playing, you know. And you know, it just kind of never dawned on me, because growing up, I didn't know what an audio engineer was, or even that the field existed. So I kind of got into making beats at the time. Like, we had been issued laptops from our school. I went to a school in Oakland, an art school called Oakland School for the Arts, and we all had laptops that we could take home and work on. And there was GarageBand on there, and so we all were kind of just, you know, like, experimenting with a DAW for the first time. And that's when I first kind of realized, like, yo, I kind of like, you know, being in a way in a place where I can manipulate sound in some form or fashion, whether it's creating different patches or, you know, diving into, you know, just different ways to create other than just having an instrument in my hand. And you know, from that time on, high school, it just kind of to go into a different direction, into where I got into Berklee College of Music, where I studied. And I just kind of like fell into the engineering part because I was looking for a major that had to do with production. At the time, I thought I wanted to be, you know, a beat maker or something like that. And they had a major called Music Production and Engineering, I'm sure as you know. And I looked into it, and everybody was like, no, man, it's not what you think it is, man. Like, it's really techie. It's like a bunch of math and stuff. You're never going to create or make beats. You're just going to be stuck in a room all day, and it sucks, man. Don't do it. And I was kind of like, I don't know, like, if that sounds fun to me, you know. But I was lucky enough to have a roommate who had just gotten into the major, and he was like, yo, I'll show you around. And he took me into the studio, and like, something clicked, and it was just like, this is where I want to spend like my career. Like, from that point on, like, everything was just focused into being able to be in that environment, hearing music through a professional tuned room for the first time. Was like a new experience for me, and you know, it's been a high ever since. So
I love that you were
fascinated with getting sounds to perfection. We talked about tuning the drums and taking a long time to get the drums tuned, how that was sort of, you know, prefacing getting into the studio and working on sounds and bringing sounds to perfection. That's really, really cool story. Awesome. So here's from what you were saying. So you're originally from Oakland, and you're based in Atlanta now. Now, Atlanta is such a hotbed of music. It's such an amazing music city. Really, in my opinion, there's nothing like Atlanta. How did you find yourself in Atlanta versus a place like LA?
It was tough because being from California, like, it seemed like the really obvious choice. Like, all my colleagues, all my roommates moved to LA right after. And I went on a trip that Berklee was having. They have trips to Nashville, Atlanta, and New York every year. I'm not sure if there are any other ones, but Atlanta was a fairly new trip. And I have a lot of family in the southern region, so I always kind of was interested in Atlanta as a city in general, so I thought the trip would be cool just for a spring break trip. Nothing else, just a cool spring break trip. And the trip was really cool. It was like it exposed me to a lot of musical history around the city, and the studios were pretty great, and just the fact that I really liked urban music, and I never had thought, like, okay, I could possibly build a career here and be able to continue to work in urban music as well as, like, being so close to Nashville. It just kind of seemed like a good choice. But it took a while to really make that decision because, you know, I still wanted to come home. I wanted to come back and go to L.A. or the Bay Area. But it took a while. It took really coming back over and over and really researching the studios. I came back here a few times. I went to another studio called Tree Sound. One of my teachers who helped me get into the studio Tree Sound, Jason Stokes at Berklee, kind of helped me navigate the city a little more, and just meeting a bunch of people here before I decided where to move kind of helped with the decision to you know, just kind of see, like, if I'm going to get my feet wet somewhere, maybe it should be somewhere where I kind of have a little bit of knowledge of how to get around. It's cheap and affordable. You know, it's not extremely super saturated like in LA or New York or something like that. So it just seemed like a good choice for, you know, a first city after college. Definitely.
That's very interesting because I always think of Atlanta being such a constant. There's so much talent concentrated in Atlanta. There's so much music production that's going on. So many artists live in Atlanta. How do you navigate that? And how do you differentiate yourself in that? Because I know there's also lots of producer engineers down there as well, you know, competing for work, but also working together. How do you navigate the city?
It's definitely one of those things where it can be a negative and a positive. But I think because of the culture of the city, like, people are very, it's not as, I don't want to say not competitive as you would think, but people really kind of are a little bit more like community built around here. Like, I feel like the music industry, from the musician side to, you know, a lot of the producers and engineers, really find a way to work together, because I feel personally like there is enough work to go around here to kind of, even if, you know, there are a lot of people who have different niches than you or similar niches, you can still find a way to work together. And sticking out is really just a basis of what your interest is. You know, like, if you go out and you meet somebody and you want to work with them, like, sometimes it's as easy as just, you know, building that connection and really being able to have the people skills to maintain that connection. And I think Atlanta is one of those cities where it's just as important to be sound as a person, like an interesting, outgoing person, as it is to be like technically savvy. Because, you know, like, it's one of those places where, like, if the artist doesn't like your vibe at all, you can be like the greatest engineer and producer, and they just won't want you in the room, you know? And so it was one of those things that was hard because I've always been a real heavy introvert. Like even in school, I was really quiet and stuff like that. But, you know, learning how to navigate controlling the room, but kind of also making sure that the artist understands that, like, you know, like we have the same interest at heart, trying to find ways to connect with them and, you know, find common ground so that they leave the situation with a positive, you know, experience was really just one way I felt that I could, you know, stick out in a way the best I can, at least.
People skills come first.
Definitely.
That's smart. So you Patchwork again is a super famous studio with a ton of history. How did you find yourself at Patchwork?
It's a classic, you know, internship program. Very competitive. I've been trying to get in this studio since I was at Berkeley. So they get resumes from all over, as I would assume most of the big remaining studios still do. And so when I moved here, I had already visited a bunch of times thanks to Berkeley and things of that nature. But when I got here, I didn't start immediately at Patchwork. Like, I've always had to really kind of finagle my way around things or really wait things out or keep working at it until it happens. But I always knew I wanted to be here. It took a while, though. I probably was here for like 8-9 months. Not too long, but for someone just getting out of school, it felt like forever because I took about 6 months after I graduated in Boston, where I interned at a few places, and then getting out here 9 months trying to get into the studio. So I worked at another studio, actually maybe 3 or 4 blocks down the street that would be considered a competing studio. And working there for a little bit kind of got my foot into the city and understanding like the way things move, you know, especially in a very hip hop heavy city. Like, a lot of things were different coming from that than coming from a school like Berkeley or coming from California. So it kind of taught me things that I'm glad I learned there so that I wouldn't screw up when I got here. But it was really networking. I had a friend who worked for a mastering engineer as an assistant and moved up continuously. And so I would always be at that mastering studio when I wasn't interning at the other studio, and he would, you know, let me sit in and learn. I talked to him all the time, and he would always tell me about a protege he had named Kenny Daniels, who is Kenny Mix, our mastering chief mastering engineer here at Patchwork. And one day I was just like, you know, can I meet him? Like, he sounds awesome, you know, I love that studio, I learned so much from you, it'd be great to meet him. And he was like, yeah, I mean, whatever, he's busy, you know. But just kind of holding out and staying at the other studio. I guess one day it came up that I worked here and I played him a few mixes and he wanted me to have lunch with him. So I went to lunch with him one day and I told him about the other studio. And he's like, man, you got to get up out of there, man. Like, it's kind of crazy, you know. So just for your safety, like, maybe you should try to get into Patchwork. And I was like, yo, I've been trying to get into Patchwork forever. He's like, oh, I'll make a call for you. And literally that weekend, the hiring engineer called me and said, can you do an interview tomorrow? And it was like my birthday party. I'm like, yeah, of course. So I literally take off that next day at my other internship and go do this interview. And he's like, great, you know what you're doing. You've been around the craziness, you know. You have an educational background. They just require you had a degree in audio. And he's like, you start tomorrow. I was like, well, I have a job and something else. So I had to make a bunch of calls and kind of make a decision. Like, you know, this is kind of my dream opportunity right now. And it's what I wanted. So I was like, sure. Yeah, whenever you need me. And I started the next day and I've been here for 5 years now.
Wow. That's great. Awesome. So you work on a lot of modern hip hop, you know, a lot of urban music. So, and I know that you work in a large format studio like Patchwork, and you also do work in, say, hotel rooms, artists' homes. What's the workflow like in the large format studio, and how is it different, or is it different from working in an artist's home or in a hotel room?
I definitely say yes, especially somebody who has a setup at home. Sometimes, like, even going through the assistant process that I did for years, seeing people come into the studio and really seeing them be able to get a really great sound and them surprising themselves at how great the sound is, even though they had, you know, an assistant there to help them, somebody who knew the room. It really lets you know, like, I think there is a huge value in having just a well-tuned room, you know, like, in my opinion, the monitoring situation, the power, you know, everything from, you know, whatever comes into play as far as like your recording space, you're recording the room, you have really good rooms, you have really good monitoring situation. I think it definitely makes a huge difference. And I think having done that for a long time kind of has allowed me to be able to know what I want to hear when I go to a hotel room or something that's kind of like expedient and like, this is the situation we have to deal with right now. So it's like, okay, I've recorded songs for movies on a tour bus. And it was like, how are we gonna, you know, and they're like, this sounds great, you know, it's great. And it's like, this is awful, you know. And being a fairly young engineer, it was like, oh my God, I do not want to have my name on this. And it's just like, tour, but like bus noise and static and all this crazy stuff. But I think you kind of find that your ear is the most important thing at the end of the day, and kind of knowing how to navigate through that, you can at least get to a place of being comfortable with the audio as well as you can, and finding ways to really manage the spaces you're in. And it's not going to be as easy all the time, but you know, I got to make do. So yeah, there's been fights I've had, not fights, but disagreements with artists where it's kind of been like, no, can we go here? And they're like, yeah. But it's like, at the end of the day, you know, you make it work, and you know, you're proud of the work you put in. So
I think I really like the point that you made of, you know, even when you are working in an environment like a hotel room or a tour bus, or, you know, not in the big room, you apply the knowledge and skills that you have to know you're working towards a good product.
Right.
You know, you you may not be able to hear it as efficiently as you could in the larger room, which has great monitoring, but you can sort of fall back on your skill set a little bit. So when you do get it to the big room, or do get it to a situation where you can hear a little bit better, you have confidence that you did it in the right way.
Right. Definitely.
What was your big break?
Obviously, being in here, people come through a lot. So I probably have a different version of what's my first big session versus what was like my big, I wouldn't say big, you know, I'm still looking for like new things all the time. But as far as my first experience that really kind of set everything into motion, was probably a session that I wasn't even really supposed to be engineering. Well, it was weird because it was an album session. They only put me on it because I love doing like this sort of live instrumentation. It was a hip hop album. It was kind of old school drums. And I'm a drummer, and you know, just the type of music that was happening kind of seemed like it fit right. And that's what I love about this studio. The managers really know us. You know, the internship process is really long and rigorous, so they know all of our strengths and weakness for the most part. And so I was very young, and they called me to do it. And I actually got an opportunity to play on the album because the drummer they called in didn't understand how to play the rhythm. And I was trying to teach him, and they were like, hey, can you actually play the part? And I was like, yeah, but I feel like I'm supposed to do something else, like, you know, like talk to the managers about it. I don't know how that stuff works. You know, I just didn't want to end up in a bad situation where I was short sold. And I think they respected that. So they called in the people, the reps at Sony, and I did all the paperwork and stuff. And everything was credited, and I ended up engineering myself playing the drums on the album, and went on later when he needed an engineer, I called him and said, hey, I see you're looking for somebody, would love to, you know, interview or whatever. And I met up with him, and he was like, you know, this was, it was great working with you before. If you want the job, you got it. So I went from being a staff engineer, which I still am, and graciously I have owners that really respect our entrepreneurship at the studio. So they were fine with me having my own personal client. And he happened to be Kanye West's main writer. So as I'm working on his music, he took me on my first tour. So I was introduced in the live sound, introduced to a lot of bigger artists, a lot of bigger projects. And, you know, it just kept, as he trusted me, like he would take me out of the, you know, out of the state, things I was never doing as a staff engineer, because I'm just, whatever comes in, I was just getting different experiences. And things like that led to a lot of other stuff. And that's how I got a lot of the stuff like the Kanye West and different, being able to work with different people of that caliber. But as it was going, I was still working in the studio. And so I was also being able to get larger clients as the studio trusted me with higher profile clients as well. So it was kind of like just a lucky, I wouldn't even say luck, like when I researched Patchwork, I wanted to be in a place where they supported our growth, you know, and didn't always, because a lot of studios in Atlanta are very strict with what you can do. But I feel like if I prove my loyalty or to the studio as well as not being someone who's going to take a client and run off with them, you know, I'm always going to try to give back to the studio, but as well bring worth to the studio as well. So I feel like, you know, they always have supported that. They helped me set up my LLC, my business early on, so that I can manage my taxes correctly and do stuff like I feel a lot of people have to figure out in a difficult way, you know. So, yeah, it was really, you know, extremely blessed to find myself at this place in Atlanta.
I would say luck is putting yourself at the right place at the right time. And you certainly seem to do that. And through that, one thing leads to another. And having a supportive atmosphere like Patchwork, I think is, you know, makes such a difference, having a team that is supportive of you and is, like you said, interested in your growth. I think that's amazing that you have that situation there. Okay. So what's it like working with artists with large personalities? Because just coming through Atlanta and, you know, also looking at your discography, you know, it is, well, from your perspective, what have you experienced, or how do you handle yourself?
That's a great question, especially being like, I would say like the urban Mecca, you get a lot of extreme personalities. And it really teaches you how humble of a person you can really be, 'cause the egos can be extreme, you know? Especially in hip hop, where a lot of people have this fame and money kind of dropped on them quickly, it can be really challenging. And I think one thing that helped me kind of deal with that was, you know, coming out of school into an internship program where I had to work my way up from intern to assistant, you know, from cleaning the bathrooms to having interns years down the line. I still feel like no matter where you are, you should respect the next person as if you would want them to treat you. If you were in a position of, I don't want to say power, but, you know, like if I have some sort of title or position that you deem to be respectable, or I'm the client, or you're the person who's getting paid, like I would want to treat you with that same respect. But I also know that sometimes when the client is paying, they're right. And so you kind of learn that it's not always personal. Sometimes it's just the environment, and you kind of learn how to get a tough skin, because I've definitely witnessed and seen and been a part of a lot of situations that were like, okay, this is a lot, like borderline unsafe. But it really taught you, like, in those moments, like, how to think quickly, because not only do you have to know, okay, I'm gonna let this person have this, they're, you know, they're paying a lot of money for this session, I want them to feel like they are on top and that they control the room. But at the same time, I control the room because this is my home and I want it to be safe. I want everybody to be safe. So you have to know when it's like just the ego thing. Okay, that's cool. But you also have to know when to say, hey, like, you can't do that in here. Like, if not, you know, you got to go or you got to end the session. And that split moment of knowing when to do that can stabilize a session. You know, it can stabilize your relationship with the artist and knowing how to go up to them. And instead of saying like, hey, you can't smoke in this room in front of their entourage, which would set somebody off into an egotistical rage where they might be like, okay, I'm gonna make an example of you. Like, just going up to them without anybody hearing, be like, hey, man, you know, like, there's a smoking booth on the side upstairs. You can go over there. And they're like, okay, it's all good. And, like, little things like that really can make a big difference between an artist hating you for the rest of the session no matter what, or them making a huge deal about something small, or them just kind of having a respect for you in the room, knowing that, like, we have a set of rules. And as long as you respect them, you know, you're definitely going to be treated with the utmost customer service and things of that nature. So
yeah. I think that speaks to respecting boundaries on both sides, respecting them and therefore then they respect you back.
Definitely. And in Atlanta, like, that's, I think as an intern, that's the main thing they teach here. Like, not just here at the studio, but I think at all the studios, that you really understand how to deal with clients, because most of the studios are dealing with high profile clientele as well as local artists. And a lot of the ways might have been learned from bigger artists who felt it was cool to disrespect the engineer, but also knowing that, like, in a lot of instances, if you put yourself out in a certain way, you know, you can definitely earn and make sure your respect is solidified in a room where people are kind of just, you know, they're just running around like kids sometimes, you know. So it's definitely a huge thing in this city, like, for sure.
Got it. It's all about respect.
It's like a movie, cowboy movie.
Yeah, well, but the music industry can be the Wild West, that's for sure. I agree with everything you're saying, Evan. It's great stuff. Okay, what are some of your go-to pieces of gear, and what are some pieces of gear that you can't live without when you're doing something remote?
Oh, remotely. Well, I guess first my go-to gear, just be my track and chain. Like, I think a CO1B, the tube tech is very well known by now. I love that piece. Specifically because I was always really a big LA-2A guy. Like, I love the slow compression rate. It's really transparent, you know, on bass, on vocals, a lot of things. But just having that kind of control with the tube tech, like, really helps with rappers sometimes who don't always have the best, you know, dynamic control. And it's not that I'm trying to even out their dynamics, but sometimes when something does get through, it can be like, okay, I'm not super like, oh my god, you know, because that compressor before my converter seems to really, like, have my back sometimes. So that's one of the pieces that if I can always have it, whether I'm like out recording somewhere or in the studio, like, that's a big piece for me. What was the other question again?
That to me answers it a lot. You know, that sort of like your desert island piece was, you know, like, you know, do you have go-to plugins? Do you use like the same sort of things over and over? Do you have a set of tools that you generally bring to every session, or does it vary depending on what's available? I love the fact that you mentioned the CL1B. That's, I identify with that. That's something that I've dragged across the country with me. Is that something that you would take to a hotel room if you weren't going to carry that across the country with you? What might you use? you know, just go-to pieces, really, or plugins?
Yeah. It definitely varies because I'm a big SSL guy. So, like, I guess maybe coming from Berkeley at the time, I was tracking a lot of bands. I still do a lot of worship music, a lot of bands here. Probably one of my most proud moments is the, working on the last George Clinton album and having Parliament Funkadelic. And you can't see the tracking room, but just... And it was so spur of the moment because, again, I was probably 2 or 3 years in. He was just supposed to be mixing. And he was like, "It's drums in there. Can we record?" And I was like, "Sure." And he was like, "Okay, you're going to record." And I was like, "Okay, you know, sure." Mm. And being able to really track everybody out against the SSL and really manipulate the sound the way I kind of had been trained in school, but hadn't done a super large amount of in Atlanta because it's not super, you know, common these days in Atlanta for people to not have sequenced instrumentation already. But it depends. So I think really here, like, I've kind of made a name for myself for, like, when people come to do choirs. I've done a lot of choirs for movies, still a lot of gospel, a lot of, like, live orchestra stuff here in other places. So it really depends what I'm doing, because if it's orchestral, like, I'm usually not reaching for the super colored SSL sound. It'll be a lot more, you know, millennia stuff, True Grace, things of that nature. But yeah, it really, there's not like one set of tools that I'll use for any given thing, but definitely for vocals, or if I am in a mixing situation, like, I'll have templates and things of that nature that I use just to make sure my workflow is spot on, because, you know, sometimes people will judge based off of how quickly you're working rather than what they're hearing. And so you just always want to be consistent and fast, for sure fast. So,
right on.
Yeah, sometimes my templates will be empty, but it'll just be routing and, you know, just something so I can quickly dial in what I'm trying to get to. But definitely want to be quick, so.
Yeah, right on. Okay, so because this is the Pro Fools podcast, and I like to say, we start the beginning of the show saying the fool may think he's a wise man, but the wise man knows what a fool he's been. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's in this business, it's important to learn from, you know, I don't want to say necessarily mistakes, but, you know, learn from doing things and then, you know, constantly be learning on, you know, how could I have done that better? That being said, what's the best mistake you've ever learned from?
That's a great saying. Like, I love that. Man, I was a hard-headed intern. I'm not even going to lie. Like, you can ask anyone in this building and they'll probably all have separate stories of what my biggest mistake was or my most important. But yeah, one thing about it is, like, I never got fired because they were like, "You always learn, you know, we don't have to tell you to do something more than once without you changing your behavior." And I really feel like, yeah, that's the drawing board right there. But I guess one that always comes to mind is a session I did in school as a vocal producer, because I think as an engineer, a lot of times we're in the rooms where people are counting on our input sometimes to really make or break their comfort. And when there's no producer, like, a lot of days there won't be a vocal producer or somebody in there who is really enforcing or guiding the session in that way. They're counting on you. And I, being a new engineer or just new to sessions in general, kind of didn't realize that yet. And I had a session where I asked a beautiful singer, beautiful voice, to come in and sing a song that, you know, she might not have understood quite as well as I thought she did. And I just was kind of like, "All right, go. Okay, go. All right, go." And maybe an hour into the session, I probably worked her crazy without getting any sort of, you know, headway into what we were trying to get to. And she, like, broke down. Like, she was crying. And I just was like, "What's going on?" Like, you know, I feel like my mics are right. You know, everything's perfect. The lighting is cool. You know, I got the song. I gave her the reference a week ago. So what's the issue? And I just remember somebody in my session, maybe somebody who was helping me out, was just like, you know, you haven't given her any real feedback or direction or, you know, just like, hey, you're doing a great job. You know, let's try this and things like that. So, you know, you're on another side of a glass, you know, and sometimes that can feel really distant. And it just never occurred to me that being in that box, not being able to hear, can be really like isolating for a person. And it's weird starting that off, because to this day, like, I really feel like my main goal in the session is to get someone comfortable, even if it's not saying anything. Like, if you don't want me to say anything, I'm gonna just make sure that your workflow is like a river, like in flow, and I don't get in the way of it, the sonics don't get in the way of it, but you can just work at whatever pace you want to work at. But at the same time, if somebody comes in and they're not feeling too comfortable, or the room is kind of big and intimidating, it's like, okay, how do I make this person feel like they're in their bedroom right now? And also, how do I let them know that what they're trying to accomplish and what we're trying to accomplish can be attained together without it being like forced down your throat and fun? At the end of the day, like, make it fun, you know? And when people start letting themselves open up and have fun like that, it really, like, amazing things happen. And I really believe, like, the vibe and the comfort is really super important. So I think that probably came from such an extreme situation, because having someone who was a friend of mine, like, really get that upset really made me think, like, yo, like, am I a bad person? Or is, like, I think I just really didn't understand, like, how to make sure somebody was comfortable in such a vulnerable position. And that is really what stuck to me for a long time with engineering in general, with musicians, artists in general. We're all super sensitive people at the end of the day. And, you know, the more we can kind of, like, show understanding and keep the environment comfortable, I think we'll do better. And that kind of was what taught me that initially, as far as a great mistake, because it was a terrible mistake. I always feel bad about it, but I think I learned a lot. It probably set the tone of, you know, who I am as a, at least as a, you know, as a tracking engineer, you know. So
I love that. It's all about putting people first. Putting people first. When people are comfortable, the art flows better.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Anthony, this has been great. It's really great catching up with you. It's great seeing you on IG Live.
You too, man.
I know we talked about doing this a while back. It's awesome to finally to get you on, and certainly great to catch up with you and talk for a bit.
Definitely.
And we'll have to do one of these again soon. I talked to Matt about us doing a roundtable where we field questions from, you know, from the crowd. I think that would be a great idea in the next few weeks.
That'd be awesome.
We'll look forward to doing that.
Cool. Yeah, I loved his interview, by the way. So that was awesome. Yeah,
awesome.
That's a great guy.
Glad to hear it. He is. He sure is. All right, man. I'm going to break off.
All right. Appreciate you, man.
Stay safe in Atlanta.
You too. Take all care.
Right. Take it easy.
All right.
The Pro Fools Podcast, Episode 1, is brought to you by The Residence Studios. The Residence Studios is a destination studio located in Central Long Island, 1 hour from Manhattan, 1 hour to the Hamptons. We offer a state-of-the-art recording and mixing studio, photo and video facilities with hotel-like amenities, 5 minutes from the beach and minutes away from Long Island's major attractions. Contact us at theresidencestudios@gmail.com or Instagram at theresidencestudios. I hope you've enjoyed the Pro Fools Podcast as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. There's no one right answer on how to make a great recording. To make great recordings, you must do your best and work your hardest. Don't be afraid to make mistakes, but be sure to quickly get over them and, most importantly, learn from them. Because a wise man knows what a fool he's been. Make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on the bell so you can be notified when we post on YouTube. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can donate via PayPal at theprofoolspodcast@gmail.com and at theprofoolspodcast@patreon.com. Email us questions and otherwise at theprofoolspodcast@gmail.com. Check out our website, theprofoolspodcast.com.